One second, guys.
Okay.
Let's...
Okay. Sorry.
I hope that makes it. Cold option option.
Sure.
Hello, hello. Welcome to season 13 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is all things residential. We are talking about ladies who are involved in residential projects.
As always, we're not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
This week, we will be talking about Mary Rockwell Hook, a pioneer residential architect in the Midwest. I'm Jessica Rogers, celebrating Labor Day weekend by going to the beach and giving a shout out to my papa and Beyonce on their birthday. My two favorite people share a birthday. And I'm based out of Miami, Florida.
Your two favorite people share a birthday? Does that mean that your mom and sister are fighting for third place?
Oh, yeah, it's a whole battle royale. There's no ranking when it comes to my favorites, okay? It's not like MySpace, okay? I don't have a top eight. I just have a group of people that are a part of my favorite people circle, okay? You guys are part of my favorite people circle. Yeah, I've noticed a pattern that my favorite people tend to share birthdays with one another, even if they're not related. So another fun fact, my sister's birthday is the same day as baby girl Miriam, friend to the show Stacey's daughter, and then Beyonce and my dad. Anyway, who are you guys?
Okay.
Besides my favorite people.
I'm Nurjeri Rivas, teasing Jessica in Houston, Texas.
And I'm Lizzie Rahr, laughing in San Francisco. Although, fun fact, I share a birthday with Miriam's brother, Diego. We're birthday buds, so.
You see, my favorite people share birthdays. It's like a weird coincidence that I've just been picking on. Anyway, to our story, to my new favorite person, the story that we're about to tell today. But before I get into it, another favorite person, a favorite listener of ours, also holds no ranking. If you're a listener, you're my favorite, okay? But what I like about this episode is that it's a listener suggestion episode.
Awesome!
Yeah. See, folks think that we don't look at your messages, but we do. And my favorite is when we get messages with listener suggestions. And then it just so happens that you have an episode due that week and you haven't decided which lady you're going to do a story on. But then when you read your message, you see that the lady that was recommended just so happens to align with the season that we are working on. Ugh, it's like the universe is working in our favor and we have amazing listeners that we are just like... connected with and that can help me through when I have no idea who I'm going to talk about, when I needed to figure it out. So then it just, they help us in more ways than one and they have no idea.
The stars aligning, I suppose.
So shout out to Jenny W, who reached out to us via Facebook Messenger. I'm telling you, Facebook is still popping. Okay. I don't know why millennials are sleeping on it and Gen Zers are like, what? Because Facebook is where it's at. Okay. And Jenny...
If you say so.
Okay.
Anyway, Jenny W. found our show when she was driving from Utah to Kentucky after a national park trip, and she wanted to learn about Mary Coulter, our episode 33 lady. And so that's why she reached out, because she was like telling us about how much she loved that episode and finding about our show. And then she suggested that we talk about one of her favorites, another Mary, Mary Rockwell Hook. And here we are.
That's so cool. I saw that message on Facebook too, and she made my day. Thank you, Jenny. Hope you enjoyed today's episode too. Jessica, did you reach out to Jenny saying that you were doing this episode? She may be able to give us more insight, possibly a charrette.
So I did tell her that we would include her this episode on our ever-growing list of ladies for future episodes. And by the time of this recording, I hadn't reached out yet, but I'm hoping to have an update in our wrap-up of what she can give, because you'll find out more. So let's get the pod started. We begin in Junction City, Kansas. Mary Rockwell was born on September 8th, 1877. Her father was Bertrand Rockwell, a wealthy grain merchant, and her mother's name was Julia. I'm not sure what her mother did, but Mary was the third out of five daughters. I'm also thinking they were like high society-ish if the dad was a wealthy grain merchant.
I mean, it sounds like it if he's described as wealthy. I mean, it sounds like they're doing all right.
Mary would attend Dana Hall Prep School and later attend Wellesley College, graduating in 1900.
Well, we've mentioned Wellesley before on previous episodes. It's an all-women's college in Massachusetts. It was founded in 1870 and was the leading college for women. And it was an early pioneer in science studies for women.
Yeah. So not much is said about her schooling just yet, right? I get the idea that she was probably just going with the motions of what life was. Parties, debutantes, college. But she also traveled. Her family was very adamant on education and travel. In 1902, Mary would return to the States after a trip to the Philippines.
The Philippines? That's interesting. Usually our ladies go to Europe, so this feels kind of new.
Yeah.
Lizzie wants to go to the Philippines. Fun fact.
I really do. It's really, keep talking about
for
it.
Real.
It keeps not working out. Someday it'll happen.
Yeah.
I've heard great things and it looks beautiful, but I love that she's branching out from the usual Europe adventure. That's a fun thing.
Seems like our theme of this episode is fun facts and favorites.
Yeah.
Well, it must have been one of her favorites because this trip proved to be very transformative for Mary because after that trip, Mary decided to pursue architecture. So in 1903, Mary would enroll at the Art Institute of Chicago to study architecture.
Ooh, very interesting. I wonder what about her travels inspired that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I want to look up pre-1900 Filipino architecture.
Yeah.
Of course, Mary was the only woman in her class. In fact, she was the first woman to enroll in their architecture program. It came up during my research that she experienced some discrimination, but I couldn't find out what exactly was going on. But after 100 plus episodes, we can imagine what went down.
Yep.
Trailblazer being the first woman. Ah! But sadly, I'm not surprised that she experienced discrimination. Like you said, we've heard tons of stories from our ladies of ridiculous comments and expectations on women at this time who were trying to get a degree and break into this male-dominated profession.
Yeah.
Sure. They dock points on their tests. They tell them they're lost. Home economics class is on the other side of the school. They flat out don't let them in the university, or they let them in, but then they don't give them a degree. We can go on and on.
Yeah.
They can't wear pants. It's like a whole thing. But like our ladies, resilience is in their DNA. Okay. And remember, Mary was the travel queen at this point. In 1905, Mary would travel to Paris to work at Jacques Marcel Haubertin's atelier.
We made it to Europe. Jacques was a prominent dude. He was also known as Jean Marcel. He was a French architect who became famous for his work in urban planning, especially reconstruction of destroyed cities. But we're not there yet.
Yes. So working for Jean Marcel was all just a waiting period for Mary while she waited to attend the École des Beaux-Arts.
Ooh, I love that she's going for the École, following in Julia's footsteps.
Now she's got to practice her French and the metric system.
Sure. But Mary ended up not getting accepted to the École. But get this. So here, she also experienced discrimination and harassment. I found a story that said that after Mary took the entrance exam, the male candidates were waiting for her to leave to throw buckets of water at her.
What?
Not sure if she got wet, but homegirl ran and caught a taxi and fled. So, like I mentioned, she didn't get accepted, and she didn't pass the entrance exam and decided not to try again. Poor thing.
Buckets of water?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, that's awful. And by this time, it's not like other women hadn't gotten in. So why do we still need to be so rude? It's just very unnecessary. I'm really sad that she didn't get in and was essentially run off from the school and that she didn't want to try again.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I wish we could press charges against these people. I hope they either led unhappy lives or at some point they came to regret their actions and fought for women's rights.
One can hope.
They came to their senses. Yeah.
One can hope.
But, you know, Miss Mary, resilient queen of travel, she was like, you know what? I'll explore French architecture on my own, and we'll just do bicycle trips with my sister.
Oh, cute. Yes, forge your own path, Mary.
Yeah, it's the early 1900s. You don't need a diploma to be an architect. Look at Frank. Nobody was throwing water buckets at him.
Oh, so true.
And they probably should have. Oh. Well.
Jessica has fighting words today.
That's a different story.
Well, I love mentioning Mary's travels because a lot of sources say that her travels would later influence her work. What I like about hearing some of her experiences is that it reminds me of us and how we travel. And just the idea of experiencing new places and new cultures.
Yeah, we've always loved exploring new places and seeing architecture from around the world. So Mary is a kindred spirit.
Yeah.
It's been a while since all three of us visited a new country together. We should fix that.
Tell me when and where.
Yeah. Well, you know I stay passport and global entry ready.
Absolutely.
So. That's right.
Let's go.
Philippines, 2026.
See?
Ooh. Listeners, drop us another country that you want us to come to. I mean, yes. I'm going for the Philippines, but let's make it a world tour, honey. World tour. Well, a source was saying that they believe that this like informal training, quote, contributed to her characteristic warmth that her work exudes. A more formal education may very well have stifled her talent, end quote.
Ah, it was meant to be this way, you see?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting observation. I can see an argument for that, that she was taught in a more experiential way than an academic one. And so for her, she learned how spaces felt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which would translate into her work.
Yeah. And, you know, she did work for Jean Marcel. So it wasn't that she didn't get
some formal training.
Right. So in 1906, Mary was back in the States. And her family decided to move from Junction City to Kansas City. And Mary gets to work, okay? She briefly works at a firm called Howe, Hoyt, and Cutler, designing bungalows and other.
Get it, Mary?
I love it. She's getting down to business and dipping her toe in the professional waters. How does it feel?
Mm.
What's the temperature, Mary?
All right and fine. Because with her father's support in 1908, Mary designs three homes, which gets built. So basically, her dad bought land and was like, let's build some houses.
Build some houses.
Yeah. So there was one in California that she did for one of her sisters. She designed her own house. And then there was the one that she designed for her parents.
Oh, a family affair. It's fun that she got to do one house in a different state, to have some different variety in context and location.
Mm.
True.
Yeah. And then her career kind of took off. She was known for designing houses on steep, sloping lots where she would incorporate the natural terrain.
Talk about a niche market.
Ooh, hillside lots. That's not necessarily easy. Way to go, Mary. I like that she found herself a niche, like Nurjiti said, that she could perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me she must have had a good handle on structure calculations and soil to be working on these difficult sites. But I can already imagine how stunning her portfolio must have been.
Oh, yeah. In 1913, Mary would be commissioned to design the campus for the Pine Mountain Settlement School in Kentucky, which we can pause right here because the listener that I mentioned at the top of the episode, Jenny, she is also on the board for this school board.
Oh.
So stay tuned to our wrap up, like I said, or you can also stay tuned to our show notes because hopefully by then, the time that all these things are posted, I will have reached out to Jenny and she would have told me and given me some additional info about Mary and the Pine Mountain School, the Pine Mountain Settlement School Board then and now.
Oh, I love that connection.
Me too. I wonder if the school is on a hill too?
Good question. It says Pine Mountain.
Well, there we go. A big hill. I don't know why I wondered that.
Well,
could be the name. You know, you don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. They could have called, maybe it was an oxymoron name. Just kidding. That would be a terrible idea. Anyway, now is a good time to hear a word from our sponsors. And we're back. So Mary designed the campus on Pine Mountain Settlement School in Kentucky. She also designed some of the buildings for the school, which was the first rural application of the model of the settlement schools, like Jane Addams's whole house.
Oh, very cool. I love the connection to Jane and that the settlement house model was expanding.
Yes. So it was essentially a boarding school in rural Kentucky that taught kids, but also taught them about livestock, dairying, furniture making, weaving, and home nursing. Over the years, she would continue to build different parts of the campus. She would use the local materials from the site, something that she was known for, and she served as the school's architect slash consultant all the way until 1968. The school now has been designated a National Historic Landmark.
Whoa, what an honor.
Yeah, amazing. I love that she stayed connected to the project for years afterwards, too.
Yes. So, in 1921, Mary, at age 44, marries Ingram D. Hook. He was an attorney, and that's what we know about him.
Okay.
But a major key fact about him is that he was a huge supporter of Mary's career, which we know that in the 1920s can be kind of rare. Usually they just stop working. Which I think, to Mary's point, that was her main fear about getting married. But Ingram, darling, he was a peach.
That's so wonderful, especially after hearing about those criminals at the Beaux-Arts and their major efforts to keep her from the profession. It's good to know her family, and now her husband supported her every step of the way.
Yes. Love. Ingram sounds like good people. We like him.
Yep.
I can imagine if you were a career woman that getting married sounded really risky at that time. So I'm glad that she was able to find someone who supported her work and didn't want to put her in a societal box, if you will.
At that time, getting married for a career woman was kind of as scary as having children is now. You know, like...
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, totally.
Maybe in less than 50 years, I hope it's not a fear anymore. Women are like, yeah.
All of it. Marriage, kids, people just be doing their life without judgment. That'd be beautiful.
I can do whatever the heck I want.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Together, Mary and Ingram would adopt two sons, and they lived all together in a new home that, of course, was designed by Mary.
Oh, so cute. I like that they were able to create a family in a way that worked for them. I bet the house was nice, too.
You know it.
And Mary's career was booming.
Of course.
In 1923, she would partner with Eric Douglas McWilliam Remington to create the firm called Hook and Remington. It would last almost 10 years until Eric decided to move to California.
That's really cool. I feel like when we hear about women during this era partnering with men at a firm, it's usually their husbands, right? I mean, that's why we've done two seasons on couples, right? But it's fun to hear about a male-female partnership that clearly thrived outside of marriage.
Yeah, platonic relationships. Well, Mary would design several homes for the wealthy people in Kansas City. She's credited with being the first to design a home with an attached garage in Kansas City.
Ooh, leveling up the people of Kansas City.
Level up. Level up.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
the official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
She is also the first to do a cast-in-place concrete foundation.
Such a pioneer!
I love this innovating.
There's also a rumor that she was the first to design a house with its own swimming pool, which was very new at the time. But I don't think she was the first in Kansas City, because I later found a source that debunked that, but still pretty cool.
Well, maybe we can say she's one of the first.
I mean, either way, if she wasn't the first, it sounds like she was still on the cutting edge, like Nurjiti is saying. And as an early designer of a pool with a house. A house with a pool.
A pool with a house. That's what I want.
A pool with a house.
Just give me a pool, honey. And then like a little shack next to it.
Lizzie, have you designed a pool with a house?
You know, I haven't. It's usually a house with a pool. Pool with a house is more unusual, you know?
What about a house with a pool?
That one, yes.
Oh, cool.
I don't design the pools, though. Let me be clear.
Oh, that was what I was wondering.
No, sorry. Like, the landscape architect does that. I design a house, and then they put a pool. And it's, you know.
So the landscape architects design the pool with the house.
I don't want to take credit for things that I'm not doing.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought that you would do it.
No.
Uh-huh. Or just get a pool consultant, and they would, like, do all the calculations.
Sometimes, but usually if you're doing a pool, it's like large enough scale that a landscape, like we often are required to have landscape plans as part of our submittals. So if you're going to do a pool, the landscape architect does that. And they usually design the pool and then it will go to a pool consultant for the construction documents, like for the structural. But the initial design is the landscape architect.
Interesting.
You know, this is about like five episodes into the season, and I think we finally get some expertise in residential architecture from our residential architect on the show. So there you go, listeners. I did not know that. See, we're always learning.
Keep it up, Lizzie.
It could be different elsewhere, but that's here, that's what happens. So.
Okay, so I mentioned it when Mary did the Pine Mountain School, but she used a lot of salvage material like tiles and stone in her projects.
This lady is lead gold before lead.
Pioneering. Okay, so there are many homes that still exist today that we can see. Folks will have to visit our show notes for more information on that. Some are also listed on the National Register of Historic Places.
I can't wait to see these homes in the show notes. And it's awesome to hear that a lot of them are still around and being preserved. Mm-hmm. I guess we got to go to Kansas City.
Yes, we really, really, really need a list of our ventures.
Yeah, we'll just be eating barbecue and touring houses.
Say no more. That's kind of my dream.
Not gonna lie.
Like, not gonna lie. That's really high on the list for me.
Besides barbecue, at least now I have another excuse to go to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did want to call out one of her iconic houses called the Pink House because of its pink stucco exterior. It's supposed to reference the San Francisco World's Fair back in 1915.
Ooh, a pink house. You know, I was expecting like a Barbie playhouse, but no. The pink is nice and subtle. I like how it plays with the green windows and the terracotta roof tiles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cute. I love the green windows and the brick with the pink stucco. Funny about the SF reference, it does sort of look like a house that could be in certain SF neighborhoods. Like, we have a lot of colorful houses here, colorful stucco. So I wonder if that architectural style was prominently featured at the World's Fair. I'm assuming she went to this World's Fair since she's a traveling girly and all.
Of course she did. She went to the World's Fair, saw it, and was like, let's do it.
This is great.
Yeah. But you do bring up a good point, Lizzie. Like, here, specific things that our ladies did or maybe saw at the World's Fair in all its iterations, and maybe even their contributions to the World's Fair, but never about, like, the other stuff, like what other things were showcased. Maybe we should do a shred on that.
Jessica, that's a great idea. I can't wait to hear what you share with us about this.
Ooh, a shred. I guess before then, before the Pink House, Mary probably didn't see that many pink houses, but the other feature that she took from the World's Fair was that this house had three balconies. So if you'll notice, it's really cute. This is also the home that her family would live in. So, like, remember when I said that her family moved into a house? It was this one. So this house was actually just one of three on the land that she purchased. So homegirl's like a developer, okay? Because she bought the lots next door, and she essentially built the three homes next to each other so that they would kind of create like this cul-de-sac.
That is so cool.
Ooh, developer status. I love it. That's fun that that's the house that they lived in because it's real cute.
All right, so perhaps it was while they were on vacay, but Mary would take her talents to Florida, specifically Sarasota. In 1935, Mary would purchase 55 acres of beachfront land for just $10,000. Oh. Sounds so crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, it's like waterfront too, I should probably point out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. She set aside some land for architects to try out new design ideas, a section that she named Whispering Sands Inn, which was meant for like writers and artists and others. But yeah, anybody could go really. And then there was the third area that became the third home for her family that she called Sandy Cove.
This girl's collecting houses left and right. I really like this writer's artist colony that she's developing, though, and that she set aside land for architects to experiment. Very fun.
Yeah. What an interesting thing to do. I wonder if and how she made money out of this. Did she rent the land or the spaces to the writers and the architects?
I mean, it was 55 acres, so she had options. So let's talk about Whispering Sands, because it was like an inn. Right. And my initial resources said that it was an artist and writer's colony, which is pretty cool. But all in all, it was paradise. OK, at least that's how they advertised it. OK, get this. I found a description from an advertisement pamphlet of the area. It reads, "One of the most interesting and unique inns in Florida. Upon arrival, one enters a yellow door and steps straight into a spacious patio shaded by tall palms and papaya trees and decked with purpose and flaming bougainvillea like frescoes in the sun. At the far end of the patio under the open sky, almost touching the inn, is the blue water of the bayou, its shore an unspoiled wilderness of palm and pine. Beyond is a wild expanse of feathery sand studded with beautiful shells that hardly has its equal in the world. And then the blue-green waters of the Gulf of Mexico. Turning from the view to look at the buildings which form the court, one realizes the art that has used such simple forms to achieve harmony and variety. All are built of the same silvery gray cypress wood."
Take me there now.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
To answer your question, Rigidity, with a description like that, honey, that's how she made her money. That was a good ROI, okay? Because Mary's work on this inn and its popularity, it would basically become the model for future Sarasota Siesta Key developments.
Oh.
So, fun fact, since it's about that time we get another fun fact. Siesta Key is one of my favorite beaches in Florida. Sarasota, Siesta Key. I briefly lived in Tampa in another lifetime and would always take my friends and family there when we were visiting to the beach. And if I had to pick which side of Florida had the best beaches, I would definitely say it was on the Gulf Coast side.
Huh. The only Gulf beach I know is Galveston, and that's not making the list of prettiest beaches anytime soon. Good to know that there's a variety in the Gulf Coast.
Okay, so back to all this land that Mary got, since we are talking about 55 acres of it. So she not only designed a house for herself, but a house for her sons and their families. Some of the land that was supposed to be for architects to experiment on was also meant for the local architecture school, which I also thought was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that is cool.
Did the school happen? Does it exist today?
Yes and no. It looks to have been a school, but now when you look into it, the term Sarasota Architecture School, it's actually referring to the local architectural style. So that part of the land became like an incubator for the architects, would also become the birthplace of the Sarasota Architecture School, something that Mary and a fellow architect named Paul Rudolph would start. They built two houses in the style, like she built one and he built one. And like I said, it became known as Sarasota Architecture Style. I do have a bone to pick, though, because of like the historians that talk about this, because in the majority of my research, they mentioned the style of architecture and they referred to it as the Sarasota Architecture School. And they don't mention Mary.
What?
They mention all the dudes that did it, but like, where's Mary? I don't see her.
That's crap. Mm-mm. Terrible.
So it's a style, and it was a school at some point. Later on down the line, it'd be called the New College. And now it's a part of the University of South Florida. So if you were to look up Sarasota School of Architecture, it'll mostly call out this style of architecture, which to our benefit, there are plenty of examples of this like tropical wood, concrete, very modernistic style. There's a lot of examples of it that exist today. So with that, we can probably see a lot of Mary's work or Mary's influences.
That's cool, at least. Mm-hmm. That's such crap, though, that they don't mention her. Like, she bought all this land and kind of started the whole thing.
Yeah, like, if anything, they could even say that this land was, like, a benefactor.
Was purchased by, even if they didn't say that she was, like, the designer, but she purchased the land.
Exactly. That's what I was looking for, but I didn't even see that. So I was like, you know what? Y'all are crap, but whatever.
Rude.
I know what I'll be doing at some point when I go to Sarasota. Knocking on some doors. But anyway, in 1950, at the age of 73, Mary would retire. Now, of course, I'm not sure what she did in retirement, but I would hope that in Sarasota, she was at least playing some bingo.
Maybe I'd go play with her.
And another interesting thing that I found out was that Mary had applied to become an AIA member twice, and she got rejected both times.
Ugh, so sad. Ugh, but not the first time we've heard that.
Not cool. Not that it matters, but was the problem her local AIA chapter in Kansas or AIA National?
You know, that's a good question, because in my research, they never specify if it's the local level or the national. So it makes me wonder, like, for example, if the local AIA chapter had denied her, but like the national AIA group would have accepted women at that time.
That's what I think. Yeah, because at that time, they had already accepted women.
Right.
Yeah, also, where are her male allies? Like, where's Paul and where's Eric?
Come on, guys.
Well, and for that matter, what was the AIA set up at the time? Like, did they have local AIA chapters?
Right. Or was it just all one big?
And then if you want to take it another step further, if you're an AIA member, you know how your dues work. Like, there's the national due, the due that's at the state level, and then there's the local city level that you live in that all goes, like, into your membership fee. So I'm curious, like, where were the barriers at which level?
Who knows? Well, I'm glad that we're past this and that national, city, state, every AIA now welcomes everyone with open arms.
Amen. So what makes this so funny is that in 1977, on Mary's 100th birthday, Mary was giving a tour in Kansas City of one of her projects, and the AIA gives her a plaque for distinguished service.
Wait, what?
Okay, so many questions. So she was alive at 100, and she was giving tours of her own projects?
Number one.
Yeah, that part.
Is this what she did in retirement? Because if so, that is way cooler than bingo, and I need to rethink my retirement goals.
Ooh.
100%. That for sure. But more importantly, I mean, obviously they should be giving her a plaque, but the hypocrisy of giving her a plaque, but they wouldn't accept her into the AIA is so maddening. I can't.
Well, not to play devil's advocate, but we have to look at it in the context of the times. She was denied twice, and I hope that was way earlier in the early 1900s, one would hope. Mm-hmm. But then in 1977, when they gave her a plaque, would have been a great time to officially give her her AIA membership too, for free.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm still confused. So wait, was this a surprise event? The AIA knew that she would be giving a tour and organized a plaque?
On her 100th birthday?
Yeah, right.
And they gave her a plaque to surprise her? Or did she know this would be happening? Like, what was going on?
All great questions. If only we had that seance budget.
Oh, dear.
Well, because it's not like they specified any of this. They were like, oh, she presented a plaque when she was giving a tour of her house. Yeah, because, you know, she's giving a tour of the house that she designed. And I'm sure that it wasn't like a surprise. Like, hey, surprise, I'm the architect of this house. Come on in.
Stepping out from behind the curtain.
But I would assume that it was highly publicized. Like, come take a tour of this house and the architect will give it to you. Now, exactly when did she receive the plaque? Like, specifically? Like you said, did it coincidentally arrive around the time of the tour? Was the plaque from AIA National, or was it like AIA Kansas that was like, here's the tour? Because it would make sense that like AIA Kansas, like the local chapter, would give her the award because they like already knew that the tour was going to happen. So they're like, oh, let's do this right now. Let's right our wrongs.
Maybe give her membership, though.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, the point is that even if it's to the very end, she did get recognized for her work, and she did a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then a year later, at the age of 101, Mary would pass away in her Siesta Key home.
Holy moly. She lived a long life.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Mary really did a lot. Not only with designing so many houses, but developing and pushing other architects forward. Such an impressive story.
Seriously, so glad a listener put her on our radar at the right time for us to learn about her. Thank you again, Jenny.
That's right.
And thank you, Jessica, for taking this on and sharing her story with us.
Of course. And a second and a third and a millionth thank you to Jenny, because this finding out about this lady really helped me in a buy. And I hope that she's listening, and thank you. All right, so now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. So without further ado, drum roll, please. Chandra Moore!
Yay!
Whee!
Chandra!
Okay, so Chandra is an architect, a developer, who runs her own design firm called COG Studio, which she started back in 2011 after walking away from this big corporate architecture firm. Before that, she spent years working on huge projects like stadiums, airports, children's hospitals, and universities all over the world.
Wow. Sounds like a big career shift.
at her firm where she works at now, they design everything from luxury homes and multifamily housing to retail spaces, offices, and community hubs. They created over 845 housing units across the U.S., always with a focus on people-first design and strong community engagement.
That's what it should be about.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
So she has an office in Atlanta and Detroit. So I was trying to look for like Midwest architects. So that's how I came across Chandra. And what I also found out about her was that she worked with another Detroit lady, a.k.a. Gable friend, a.k.a. Sandra Little.
Ooh, so great. We love Detroit. We love Sandra.
Yeah, so be sure to check out her podcast.
Sandra and Chandra.
Cool.
Oh. Ooh, I wonder if that's what they kept saying to each other. All right, before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid, along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your family. Tell them all. Tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website at shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SheBuildsPod. Until then,
see ya.
Bye.
Adios. Jacques was a prominent dude.
Jacques.
He was also known as Jacques. Okay. Jacques.
Well, I mean,
you know, France.
You could say Jack.
All American.
Jacques was a prominent. Let me say it.
I'm sorry.